Thank you and good morning. I'm nominating Honorable Manana to be acting chairperson.
Any further nomination? Do I have a seconder for Honorable Manana? Thank you. Honorable Manana, you may take the seat.
It lives.
Thank you very much for the correction. You are welcome to a very vibrant committee. Of course, the Minister of Culture.
project of ensuring that we have a very productive service, public service in our country. You're welcome. There's also a member from the ANC who is new in the committee, Honorable Kumbi. You're also welcome. Well, we have three apologies, members. One from the minister, who is not feeling well. The deputy minister is attending to other engagements. The chairperson is held up in Johannesburg doing organizational work. And we have an apology from Honorable Ramasaka. So those are the four apologies we have received. Now, members, for purposes of this particular meeting, I'm just going to request that we introduce ourselves, starting from the members, because of course the new members to come in, even though we've been interacting with some of the officials from the department, from the entities, but the new members do not know them. So to them it's proper that we introduce ourselves and then we take it from there. As I had already indicated, my name is Joseph Banana. And I'm part of this committee by the ANC and also the WIP.
My name is Christina Mohale, representing the ANC in this portfolio committee.
Hi, I'm Edwin Williams, I'm in the ANC.
My name is Dalitra Shema, the face of the ANC.
Thank you, my name is Johanna Mulima Ruleke, I'm the member of the ANC.
Thank you. My name is Dumisani Kumbi, a member of the ANC.
And as you heard, my name is Lucas Murray, and I'm from the DA.
And mine is Dietlich Tway, also from the DA. Thank you.
My name is Walid Omar, from the AGSA.
My name is Ndumis Biana, committee researcher.
Stavili Mbambo from PNG.
Hey, my name is Mashua Fedipofa from the Department of Public Service and Administration.
Mr. Kenny Governor, Department of Public Service and Administration.
Morning, Chairperson. Blake Moskogi Fatoma from CETA, CEO.
Good morning, Chair and colleagues. My name is Siri Potritter Tourbune and I'm the acting chairperson of CETA.
Tembeka Mjulo from CETA.
Morning, Chairperson and Committee. Sumayman Reddy, Private Office of the Minister, TPSA.
Good morning, Chairperson. Dr. Sharon Orton, Private Office of the Minister. DPSA.
Morning, Chair. My name is Lebos from DPSA.
Morning, Chair. Oliver Kubelani, Minister of Public Service and Administration.
Good morning, Alvin Rapper, Minister for Public Service and Administration.
My name is Abbasan Kumbuza Chaveni from CETA.
No, thank you very much. And you might as well introduce ourselves all of us.
Najib Nega, is that? Balan Tebu, Minister for Public Service and Administration.
Good morning, I'm
Kudan Gavin,
Camilla Abrams, Parliamentary Officer, DPSM, Office of the DG.
Well, thank you very much, members. I think that was very necessary, because at least we do know each other now, and we'll be able to address one another accordingly. We have just got an indication that the minister is in fact attending a cabinet meeting today. The indication during, early in the week was that he's not well, but we are very delighted that he was able to attend a cabinet meeting, so it means he's fully recovered. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we had invited the Minister of Public Service Administration and the Minister of Finance to get a progress report on the finalization of the PESA cleanup process to integrated financial management system. Of course, as I have already indicated, that the Minister of Public Service Administration is attending a cabinet meeting, not to mention the Minister of Finance is also attending a cabinet meeting. But of course, they have sent their capable officials to come and present the progress report to the honorable members, to the portfolio committee, because I think it's in the interest of this committee from time to time to make follow-ups on the progress made as it relates to whatever matter that was raised in previous meetings. Now, the personal system, as I understood it, did not cover the many areas that it should be covering, and thus giving inaccurate information insofar as staffing is concerned and many other things. But of course, I think when it was put in place, the system was designed to look at issues of salaries and all of those. As I understood it, members would appreciate that when this particular matter came before the committee, I was not here. I was, however, able to go through the document, and I then got a sense from my understanding of this presentation that it was around 2005 that cabinet then felt we should move towards a much more modern system in order to have accurate figures on who is the public service, to avert ghost employees and all of those things. Now today, it's a matter of receiving that progress report where we are in terms of this particular system, but as well what has been the financial implications, where are the challenges. I think members would want to get that information so that they are able themselves in their oversight role as members of parliament overseeing the executive to play a much more active role in ensuring that indeed this system is well implemented and the set time frames are met. So I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to hand over to the department to take us through this particular presentation, and then thereafter the members will then engage the presentation. Of course, we have Treasury, National Treasury, City. So I'm certain that they will be able to share
but what the DG has indicated, we need to indicate that this presentation is a follow-up from the meeting of August 2011, where it was a joint sitting with the Finance Portfolio Committee as well as the Public Service and Administration Committee. So the presentation we're presenting today to the Portfolio Committee, you're going to look at the following areas. Basically, the ends and objectives of IFMS, what do we ultimately want to achieve with this particular project, some of the benefits, why the IFMS, giving a background and where does the mandate come from in relation to this particular project, the cabinet memorandums of 2005 and 2007. We look a little bit at the governance structure. A number of questions have been raised in the past in relation to who's responsible for what. So we define the roles and responsibility between the three organizations seated here today. We look at the product scope as well as the progress to date in relation to both the product development as well as the non-product product deliverables that we need to do, as well as to where we are in relation to implementation. We speak a little bit about the industry and industry involvement in this particular project, an indication of the cost implications. We also highlight the reasons for the slippages. Yes, that there have been some challenges with the project, we want to raise that. But at the same time, we want to also address the strategies to remedy the situation. So it's in hand in relation to addressing the slippages we find ourselves. Where to next in relation to IFMS? And then finally, as DG indicated, we will be looking at the Passau cleanup, but more especially from the perspective of saying what is the relationship between the Passau cleanup versus the IFMS project that we want to put on the table. What was the ultimate aim that we set out to achieve in relation to the IFMS? We intended to provide an integrated financial management system, or commonly referred to as IFMS, to all provincial and national departments that integrates human resources, payroll, financial, supply chain management, as well as business intelligence across all departments. The objectives was to replace aging technology. One of the major problems we find ourselves in at the moment is in relation to PERSAL, VAS, LOGIS, PERSOL, PERSAP, all of those payroll systems, was they were based on very old technology, so-called legacy systems, and the challenge is trying to update them and to maintain them in relation to Public Finance Management Act or the Public Service Act or any recent legislation that comes on the table. We're also using this opportunity as part of the IFMS to refocus CETA in relation to its core mandate and establishing the PCETA as a prime systems integrator. We also needed to use, and we also, as part of that cabinet decision and the mandate, is to ensure that we develop sufficient skills within the industry in South Africa so that we can maintain and manage the system going forward. Why IFMS? A number of these things are linked to the ends and objectives. As I indicated very clearly, the primary objective was to replace legacy systems. The challenge that we find ourselves in is the lack of inherent interoperability and business intelligence services. We cannot get that from the current systems, and any new systems that come on board cannot talk to the old systems in terms of the technologies that are applied across the board. The increasing difficulty to maintain and upgrade the current system, the challenges to support the changing policy environment to ensure that we can speedily implement changes that occur, and also to ensure the functionality e-government is improved along the way. We also needed to provide some sort of a centralized solution to ensure that the standard use of technology, and also to ensure that we as government can leverage on the economies of scale, one of the chief responsibilities of CETA in terms of procuring all solutions as well as hardware. We also wanted to, as part of the IFMS project, improve automation of business processes to improve efficiency in the manner in which we conduct business within government. We certain with the introduction of the IFMS, we'll be able to improve the quality of data as well as the access to data, and we will be able to remove manual data capturing processes within government. There are a number of potential savings in terms of the exercise that we've undertaken. Least among them is the elimination of leave, manual capturing of leave, but there's a range of positives in terms of centralized information, in terms of better understanding of human resource management, better understanding of financial management, and so on. Where did we obtain our mandate from? The mandate to implement IFMS originates in a cabinet memorandum of 2005, followed this was informed by an exercise that was undertaken in 2002, mandated by the Budget Council, which asked us to, as part of phase one deliverables, to look at the master systems plan, define user requirement statements, and define the prospectus in terms of the rollout of the IFMS project. But the decision of 2005, augmented by the decision of 2007, put in place phase two and phase three, which was largely the first part of it, phase two, focused on building the capacity and building CETA as the prime systems integrator. In 2007, Cabinet also took a decision that all of the developmental work as part of phase three, two of them, which is the commercial off-the-shelf software in relation to the HCM, or the human resource management module, as well as the procurement management module, needs to be fast-tracked and moved up earlier into 2005 to be achieved. Phase three dealt with all of the work in relation to the development of the various modules that forms part of the IFMS. They also set some very tight timelines at that point in terms of achievement. Phase two over 24 months, and phase three over 60 months. The Cabinet Memorandum also provided for a comprehensive governance arrangement to ensure that the project is overseen and implemented according to plan. In this regard, you'll notice at the apex of that triangle, we had the Ministerial Oversight Committee, driven by the Minister of Finance and the Minister for Public Service and Administration as the lead ministers in this regard. Immediately below the Ministerial Oversight Committee, we have an IFMS Steering Committee chaired by the DG National Treasury. And the representatives for this particular steering committee included the CEO of CETA, the DG DPSA, and as well as representatives from Department of Defense, South African Police Services, as well as the GTOP Council participated in this process. Immediately below that, we had the technical work, or the hands-on project management work, which was the SLA, or Service Level Agreement Committee, that also had representatives from National Treasury, CETA, DPSA, to take care of the day-to-day management of the project as a whole. Below that structure, you have the various reporting lines and the various activities that need to be undertaken and feed into this governance arrangement that we set up. On the left-hand side, you have the CETA in relation to establishing himself as the prime systems integrator, the relationship between the transversal systems in terms of policies, the service levels, the rates, the benchmarks, and how do we manage that from a user organization perspective. Remember, each department has some unique responsibilities, and one needs to integrate that into the system. On the right-hand side, the bigger block deals with each of those core modules that we need to establish, the financial, the HR, supply chain, and so on. But at the same time, we needed to deal with the issues around changes, policy changes, changes in the system, and so on, in relation to the user requirements. And that was managed through individual project board that was set up. Sorry, just to indicate, on the left-hand side, we also have the phase two advisory panel. There was a clear understanding as part of the ministerial oversight is to ensure that we have an independent advisory panel to ensure that this architecture, the systems, and capacity that we put in place meets the requirements. Defining the roles and responsibility in relation to DPSA National Treasury and CETA. You'll notice that the roles and responsibility between DPSA and National Treasury are very similar in nature, in the sense that DPSA is responsible for HR policies, processes, and systems in the public service, and therefore we needed to ensure that the system we developed, IFMS, addresses and supports these HR policies and practices. In the same breath, if you look at National Treasury is responsible for supply chain management policies, processes, as well as financial management processes, policies, and so on. So National Treasury's role in terms of the system was to ensure that all of those processes are adequately captured and catered for in the system, and the system supports those policies and processes. In that regard, the responsibility of DPSA and National Treasury was similar, as well as we oversee the rollout. Now, simply put, if you look at the policies and practices in HR, DPSA is responsible for the general public service, but there are some differences between education, police, and so on. So we have to maintain those commonality and uniformity across the board, and therefore we oversee as DPSA and National Treasury the rollout on the financial aspects of National Treasury minister, on the other hand, was responsible for, firstly, to develop an appropriate overall integrated solution architecture and system specification, all of the technical aspects, including prime systems integrator, and so on. They are also responsible for development, the acquisition, and the integration of components in terms of the five areas, and services, the overall solution going forward. They will also be responsible for providing technical support of the solution lifespan. So it's quite a responsibility that rests with CETA in terms of implementation and support. In relation to the three partners in this particular project, we also have a collective responsibility of ensuring the future of the solution in relation to pricing policies, level of quality of services, as well as the manner in which we support government departments going forward. We also need to ensure the integrity of the IFMS. In that sense, we want to ensure collectively we manage the system in such a way that we still maintain that sense of unity and integration going forward. Very quickly, the product to be completed as part of the IFMS solution as a whole, as we indicated, it brings together a number of products in an integrated manner, with a single database, single access to information, and so on. The four core modules that needed to be developed or purchased was the supply chain management module, and under that you had various areas that we needed to focus on: catalog management, procurement management, inventory management, as well as asset management. Under human resource management, the module we mentioned purchased as a module off the shelf system caters for those 14 different areas that needed to be covered, the entire spectrum of HR functions in terms of what needed to be done. Financial management and payroll management is, broadly speaking, to address the MPA budget processes. Financial management in departments largely aimed at replacing the current per cell and per cell payroll solutions to be into a single integrated payroll solution, as well as to replace asset books and financial systems that we have. And then finally, to ensure that all of them provide the business intelligence reports, analysis, dashboards, data management. The idea is also to improve the management of information and to improve the provision of information across the world through better information. Where are we in relation to progress to date? Again, firstly, would be non-product deliverables. The first key issue that needed to be achieved as part of phase two was the primary systems integrator responsibility of capacitation from the side of CETA. The CETA underwent internal self-assessment, which was supplemented by an assessment that was led by the Johannesburg Center of Software Engineers in terms of whether they've achieved that particular status or are they capacitated to meet that objective. The assessment by CETA by an independent panel of experts is scheduled to take place in 2012, and that panel will be appointed by the minister, by the ministers, Minister of Finance and Minister of Public Service and Administration, jointly to ensure there's an independent assessment on that capacity of CETA. A large amount of work has been done in relation to the cost recovery as well as the pricing model in relation to the rollout and development work and implementation of the entire project. We've developed a high-level cost and pricing model that has been completed. Discussions are taking place between the three partners at the level of the CFO, and that will be finalized during the course of the year. Work has been done in terms of skills development as well as change management. CETA has been working closely with industry as well as upgrading its own capacity to support the implementation of the IFMS project, as well as skilling people externally, internally. There's been a number of projects that CETA has been working with, even in terms of rural areas and partnerships and internships, building capacity around IFMS. The change management strategic framework has been completed and is being implemented in the various lead sites as part of the implementation of this project. Around the implementation capacity, there's the implementation method. The toolkit itself has been completed and it's ready for implementation. The partnership database has been established and CETA already has on board approximately 155 partners to support the implementation of the IFMS project. Progress in relation to the product development. Firstly, speaking to the supply supply chain management, the core module in relation to supply chain management, the asset management, the procurement management, and the catalog management components of the supply chain management has been completed in 2010 and 2011 respectively. The supply chain management extended module to include inventory is currently in progress, and that will be completed in 2012. The human resource module, as part of the IFMS, was completed in 2010. The payroll is currently under adjudication, and the indications are that that tender should be completed within the course of this month and should be awarded by the latest early next month. The intention or the envisaged delivery date in relation to the payroll solution will be 2013. The financial management, the core financial management module of the IFMS, that tender has been issued. Tender is currently under adjudication, and I'm sure very soon we'll be approaching the CETA board for the approval of the awarding of that tender. The envisaged date of delivery of that particular module is 2030. Business intelligence contract has been issued. The work is currently in progress, and it should be completed during 2012. The methodology in terms of the approach we took in the implementation of the IFMS modules is that as we complete each module, we also follow the process of need size implementation to test it at the level of users to see whether the system meets our requirements and if there's any fine-tuning at the end of the day that needs to be done. So in that regard, we've completed the following need size implementations. Firstly, at the National Treasury, the notice DPSA and National Treasury chose to be the lead site for the work that we were involved in. So at National Treasury, we've used as a lead site in relation to the asset management module as well as the procurement management module. In the Limpopo province, in the departments of the National of Provincial Treasury, the Roads and Transport, Local Government, and Housing and Agriculture, we've implemented the asset management module. And in the Public Service and Administration, the Human Resource Management module has been implemented as lead sites. The following lead sites are currently underway, and we're currently working with them. In the Limpopo Department of Health, the Asset Management module, Free State Department of Health, the Human Resource Management module, as well as the Department of Defense, both assets as well as procurement management module. To give a quick indication as to industry involvement in terms of this project with CETA, we have a number of vendors that have been contracted to support the development work as well as the implementation work in the lead sites. In this regard, for the human resource module, it's a Suminya consortium that has been contracted to support us. The integrated development environment is IBM. Technical support services is BIKES. Procurement and management is ICT Works Consortium. Catalog management is PILOG. Business intelligence is Praxis. We're also very mindful of the fact that as CETA or as DPSA or National Treasury, we'll need to work with a range of partners, and it's part of the mandate that Cabinet has approved in 2005 that we establish partnerships with industry in the rollout of the project. In this regard, CETA has issued a tender and has invited industry partners to be included on the database to support us for the national rollout of the IFMS. In this regard, 155 companies or service providers have been included on the CETA database. The numbers there are the numbers per province. You'll also indicate, we want to also indicate that you'll notice if you add up all those provinces, you won't get to 155. There are some of those companies that will appear in a number of provinces as well. So you'll have a company registered in Gauteng, Limpopo, KZN, Eastern Cape, so the numbers will be telling you more about that. The CETA is also providing, is also processing all of the applications in terms of the partners and following a very, very vigorous process of accreditation to ensure that they have the requisite skills, knowledge, and expertise to support us in the implementation and maintenance of the system. And CETA is following an accreditation process. To date, 24 partners have been accredited to support us with the national rollout. An indication of the costs of the IFMS thus far. In relation to all the work that has been done to date, it has cost want to indicate that 559 million it takes into account the purchasing of the off-the-shelf systems in relation to service level agreements and maintenance. It includes the development work in terms of the lead site, as well as lead site implementation. It also includes licensing, infrastructure costs, establishing CETA as a PSI, the capacitation of CETA, all of those aspects, including all of the developmental work, all the work that has been done to date. At this stage, we still acknowledge there's a number of outstanding products that needs to be developed. Hosting needs to be factored in going forward, infrastructure, as well as the implementation cost. All of that will be dealt with as part of the MTF processes going forward. It's difficult to quantify the total cost from this point onwards. We acknowledge that the reason for us not quantifying them at this point will be dealt with as part of our arrangement with the industry partners as well. The understanding is, in terms of the cabinet decision, is that we need to work with partners in the industry to ensure there's a sharing of cost going forward. So we still need to get a sense of what that's going to amount to. We've been upfront and indicating quite clearly, yes, if you look at the dates of the cabinet memorandum versus the dates that we've completed our work and what still needs to be completed, there's been slippages along the way. And in that sense, we want to identify the reasons for those slippages and indicate as such to this committee. Yes, the IFMS was not fully implemented and rolled out to government as envisaged, primarily due to, one, the complexity of the IFMS program. I think we underestimated the work that needed to be done in terms of the time frames that we set ourselves. We also had some difficulty in terms of longer than planned procurement and contract negotiations process. I can personally say, as part of the HRM contract negotiations, it was a difficult experience, and some of us had to learn corporate law as we are going through those negotiations processes. So some of us ended up with some difficulties and delays. We've learned from them, but the next slide we'll talk about some of the lessons learned and how we've improved on it. A lack of full capacity in CETA IFMS team, it took us longer than expected to build a full capacity within CETA to fully implement this project going forward. The moving of the responsibilities from phase 3 into phase 2, in particular, cabinet decision of 2007 to indicate that we must purchase commercial off-the-shelf systems in relation to human resource management as well as in relation to the supply chain management created an additional burden and threw us off in terms of the timing as well. Readiness and change management issues at lead sites also contributed to some of the delays in terms of in particular the lead site implementation. We also had a slight difficulty in relation of misalignment of product procurement and product development. Some of the products took us longer to bring on board in relation to implementation. We also identified some of the lack of functional skills in some departments that contributed to the delay. Remember that each of the new departments have to sign off and the blueprints have to sign off on the work that has been done in each of those departments, including the user requirements for those departments. So those functional skills and technical knowledge contributed to some of the delays. But having noted some of those slippages and the reasons for falling behind in relation to the time frame, we are now very clearly put in place a strategy to remedy the situation, to ensure that we now get it right going forward. We firstly hope to very soon approach government with a new mandate, with a new set of timeframes that are realistic, and we will need to ensure that they are monitored and implemented in terms of that revised timelines. We've addressed in the last few years CETA's capacity issues, and CETA is now in a position clearly indicate that their capacity themselves to support the implementation of IFMS. And I'm sure CETA will speak to some of those things. And as well as the partnerships with the industry will support the quality of going forward. What we've done in terms of improving contract negotiations in all of the tenders that have been issued subsequent, we've built in the key requirements as part of the tender requirements rather than to deal with it as part of contract negotiations. It helped us to fast track some of the contract negotiations that we needed to do. The IFMS architecture itself, which is now finalized and approved and in place, has been institutionalized, and it will assist us in solving the number of complex questions that come up around the developmental work. rights arrangements has been improved to ensure that the time frames that we set ourselves are closely monitored and accountability is held where we expect any slippages going forward. What are the next steps in relation to IFMS? We need to finalize the development of the outstanding modules, including the adjudicating and contracting of the current service providers and the current tenders that are out there. CETA, together with DPSA and National Treasury, will provide a strategy for the rollout of IFMS, which will be consulted with relevant stakeholders during the course of 2012-2013. We want to commence with a national rollout of the selected modules, the modules that are ready for implementation. We want to start a national rollout, and we want this to commence with the effect of the current financial year. We're looking at around September of this year to start. Moving from the IFMS, just to very briefly speak a bit about the relationship between PERSAL and the cleanup, the PERSAL cleanup of IFMS, because a number of questions have been asked as to why do you want to clean up PERSAL when you're moving to a new modern system in a sense. And the response is a simple one. Is we want to ensure that the information that we migrate or we move from the current PERSAL system into the new system is clean, correct data and information, the information that we move across. It doesn't help us moving the incorrect information across. And you're starting off with that note already, and you're compromising the new system in a sense. PERSAL will still be utilized as a payroll system and as a source of reporting on HR in the public service for a number of years until it IFMS is fully implemented. That simply indicates that PERSAL, as we roll out HR and payroll solutions, we'll be switching off for those departments. But it'll take us a couple of years before we complete the implementation across government, and then only will PERSAL as a system be switched off and at that point. But remember, all of that information will still be backed up and used as historical information, calculations, and all of that going forward. Very briefly, to indicate that as part of the PERSAL cleanup, the methodology we're using is workshop and trying to work with departments. We've completed engagement with 8 provincial administrations. Gauteng is the only administration that's outstanding. We scheduled to meet with them during the course of this month. We have a date already. You'll notice we've only engaged with 10 national departments. The reason for that is we targeted those departments where we believe we have most problems. We didn't go to those departments that have their information on PERSAL is more reliable than the other departments. So we followed a process of targeting and focusing our energies and efforts. The workshop itself focused on a methodology that was developed by DPSA to support departments in doing the work. Departments were then given their methodology, taken them through the process. We also used that opportunity to illustrate the importance of HR management and the importance of accurate HR management information, particularly in relation to planning and decision making. Colleagues, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. This is simply to say the entry point into the work that we did around PERSAL was through the premier's offices. We tried as far as possible to engage with HOD forums. We also engaged with practitioners as well as senior managers in the HR field and brought them on board in terms of what is the value and what is the process we're going to follow in the PERSAL cleanup exercise. This slide is simply a slide to show that all of that effort is starting to bear fruit in terms of ensuring the information on PERSAL is correct. And this slide just simply pulls up one example. It's in relation to the improvement of the citizenship information. Remember, the PERSAL information captures all your biological information as well as nationality, your qualifications, vacancy rates, all of those things. This is just simply one area that we pulled out. When we started the project as at 30th of September, just on the issue of citizenship, in Eastern Cape, there were just below 400 names that appeared there without an indication of what that individual's citizenship was or nationality. At the end of the process, as of 31st of December 2011, through the efforts of cleaning up and getting all of that information on track, that number is now reduced to just over 100. And you'll notice in all of the other provinces, the effort to clean up is now paying dividends. As I indicated, this is simply one area that we've highlighted. monitor the implementation of some recommendations based on quarterly reports, and these are quarterly reports that we draw from the Project Management Watch system in DPSA, and that will be submitted to the department, heads of departments in particular. We will do continuous monitoring based on the project plan submitted with the timelines of each of the departments, and if there are any non-compliance, we will then use the minister to communicate with the relevant executive authorities to indicate non-compliance. Strengthening accountability, reporting of data quality analysis will be done on a regular basis, and we will use the information as of August 2011 that has established a baseline in terms of the quality of information going forward. Anyway, that's Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, colleagues, thank you very much. That's the presentation from our side in relation to the joint work that has been done between CETA, National Trade and DPSA.
Thank you very much. should I now take hands from the members if they want to engage the presentation? And of course, I'm sure CETA, National Treasury, and the department will be able to respond to all the questions from members of the place. I will take the hands. I do have some few questions myself, but I will give honorable members the opportunity first, and then we'll then get responses. I will take honorable Adrian Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just got four questions. The first one is, 7 years have passed since the 2005 cabinet memo. When will this process be completed? My next question is, how long after completion of the process will the IFMS take to pay for itself through the cost recovery model? And maybe not pay for itself completely, but you know, how much will it pay? Will that model pay for, and how long will it take? The next thing I have is bearing in mind that some R500 million has been spent so far, how many jobs, direct and indirect, have been created through this process so far? And my last question is, can the DPSA, the National Treasury, and CETA assure this committee that all tender processes are fair and no issues of corruption will be raised in the future? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just as a background for myself, I know that this is a huge task where you must depend on people, and that is more than often the most challenging thing in any organization. Now, there are two sayings that comes to mind to me, especially if I look at the reasons for slippages and your strategy to remedy that. In computers, we know that there's a saying, garbage in, garbage out. So, you know, and there's another one, what you don't know that you don't know it. It means that you know, you think you are okay. So those are, you know, capturing a lot of my concerns and the things that you have mentioned. If I start from the beginning, you have mentioned about the phase two advisory panel that will be independent. I think I've heard you correctly saying that it will be independent. Now, please qualify that independency of this advisory panel. You know, by whom will it be appointed? Where will you recruit them from? What will be their field of expertise? So just to qualify that independency of that panel. Then if you look at the roles of DPSA, National Treasury, and CETA, have you got a model to determine value for money? Because a lot of money has been spent. We've now just heard the questions about future in terms of recovery, and somehow you must have a definition and a comparable system to say that, do we get value for money, and how do you qualify that? if you look at a model of productivity and how, because most certainly, you know, productivity in a very narrow definition is your output must be more than your input.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you defined that? Because most certainly, I think what we have heard so many times is that in government, productivity is very low. I mean, the things that you have mentioned, the departments, the provinces that you have mentioned, we know is because of poor performance, and that's unacceptable productivity. How have you approached that, and what have you done in that regard? Then, when you look at what you've mentioned about your partners and how you've, you know, involved industry partners, you know, who are these partners? How have you identified the partners? What has been the criteria to evaluate these partners? And how will you be monitoring them? Because again, garbage in, garbage out. What you don't know, you don't know that you don't know it. In you've mentioned that it's, you know, the cost is 559 million so far. But eventually we must quantify the cost of this. Because you can't take from the left hand to give it to the right hand, but you don't know how much you're taking and you're giving it. Eventually there must be a cost determined, irrespective of how it has been centralized or how it's been rationalized, but eventually we must have a cost, otherwise we will never know how much money government is spending. It's not just the department, but on this whole process. On the way you've mentioned about the strategy to remedy the situation, you have mentioned there that once CETA's capacity problems have been addressed by CETA, turn around and augment it with the industry. Obviously we need details. I mean, for the moment I accept your bona fides and your word on that, but we will obviously need details and see how this will be done. And, you know, is this really in terms of our definition, the right, you know, remedies that you have implemented? And obviously, you know, to see whether this remedies is really bearing fruit for us. And the same with governance and oversight arrangements. You know, it sounds very, very laissez-faire, you know. Governance and oversight arrangements have been improved. I'm comfortable with arrangements. It seems like, you know, we get around the fire and we make some arrangement. It must be linked to standards, it must be criteria, it must be substantiated, it must be measurable. And Mr. Chi, that's it for the moment. Thank you very much.
Once this is in place, does it require a single public service, or does it tolerate the status quo? The one question I have. The other question is that could you elaborate on the procurement? Because I'm not sure here if it's procurement for the system or around the system or for all departments. I'm not sure about that. Yeah, and because if you carry on like this, they could have pushed only one of us here.
How the
2013, 2014, 2015. How are your projections looking like? And my last question on slide 18 is on the criteria that you've used to measure whether the personal information from one department is much more accurate than the other. Which criteria how to measure that? Because I would imagine you have to do a cleanup. To a cleanup in time throughout the department, the provinces, and not just do it. But if indeed you've identified those that have accurate information, which criteria did you use to measure that? I hope my questions are clear. Yeah. Okay. Over to you.
Thank you, and I will check the members for those questions. I will speak to some of them and then invite my colleagues from DPSA, Tracer and CETA to deal with the other questions. I think just to talk to the question raised by the Honourable William regarding the cost implications of this project, and it links to a later question that was asked there, I think, which was by Honourable de Doit about the relating those to the benefits. That if you compare this with what is happening at the moment in the public service, there are certain things we are simply not able to do. If you take the module that has been presented, for example, on HR, a list of things that are reflected there in that module. We just don't have them at all in the public service at the moment. There are certain fields in personnel which are limited, and the others just don't exist at all. Understanding, of course, that personnel was initially introduced not as an HR information system, but as a payroll system. But the fields were added over time to enable it to capture this information. So if you look at human resource planning, for example, there's a lot of work that is being done around human resource planning in the public service so that we're able to look ahead and say what is the nature, numbers of skills, people that we're going to need in this institution over the next 3, 4, 5 years. At the moment, that is an exercise that the people responsible do elsewhere. They produce a report and say this is the plan that we'll implement. But we don't have a system. If you want to look for that information across the public service and analyze it, and look at trends and look at gaps, you can't find it because there isn't anything in place that allows that to happen. The same thing applies to performance management. I mean, except that you'll have the performance management system as in a paper system that exists and allow people to enter into performance agreements and the assessments are done manually. This information is captured manually in those documents that exist. So if we are asked at the moment to say what is the overall trend in terms of the performance of, for example, level 30 managers across the public service, we can't answer that question. We're going to have to compile a questionnaire, approach all the departments, and say give us this information with the risk that some of the information may not be reliable. So in terms of the benefits, what is happening here is actually a system that addresses areas where management is not efficient. And therefore we end up in investing a lot of resources in studies that need to be done where it may not be necessary. You just basically do a desktop analysis based on the information that you pull from the system. I'm just flagging that when we deal with the issue of cost-benefit analysis, that we take that into consideration as well, that it's actually dealing with things that don't exist at the moment in the current configuration. The Honourable Marera is a question about if once the system is running, will it tolerate the current arrangements or will it require single public service dispensation? It's been done with the current system in mind. If you look at the role players at the moment and the systems it seeks to replace. But with that vision, to say when the time comes to go that route, we'll at least have put the system. slide that talks about the governance arrangement, there's a triangle at the top. I think that this, in our assessment, is the most critical triangle in the governance arrangement of this project to make it happen. At the top, you have the Ministerial Oversight Committee. That's on slide 6. You have the Ministerial Oversight Committee, then you have the IFMS Steering Committee, and then you have the IFMS SLA Management. We're saying that the governance arrangements have been improved because those structures are now more active than they were before. They've been improved because if you look at, let's just take an example, the IFM Steering Committee, where there must be the DG of National Treasury, the CEO of CETA, and the DG of DPS. We have reactivated the structure, and we meet as the three parties to take steering decisions about this project. And arrangement processes are in place now for the Ministerial Oversight Committee, Minister of Public Service and Administration, and the Minister of Finance to play their role as well. In terms of oversight, and that's been one of the challenges in terms of the governance arrangements to make sure that because the rules are very clear, the rules of those structures are very clear, but the need has been to ensure that the time is made for these structures to meet and take the steering decisions that need to be taken and make the play the oversight role that needs to be played. And let me hand over to colleagues from CETA first to deal with some of the issues that are specific to CETA, and then National Treasury, and then my other colleagues from DPSA will come in.
Thank you, Honourable Member and Director General. There's quite a few questions for CETA. What I will do is deal with some of the strategic ones, and then my colleagues from the CETA management will deal with some of the operational issues. The member asked about the turnaround strategies. In March 2010, Cabinet approved a turnaround framework for CETA, as well as approved the appointment of a new board. And since then, the board has been reporting to this committee as well on the progress with regards to the turnaround strategy. But the 60% vacancy rate was at the point of the appointment of the board, because the IFMS at the point was at a stage where it was virtually at a standstill, and one of our priorities was to ensure that we look at how do we speed up the process towards that. So one of the things that has been done during 2010 was immediately to begin to migrate personnel to be able to start the IFMS. And the 60% vacancy rate is something definitely of the past. The IFMS in CETA is nearly at its full capacity, and we're looking at expanding the capacity as the different modules are being rolled out. So that's the one question. A related one is, how do we ensure the integrity of the procurement programs? One of the reasons for our CETA turnaround strategy was exactly the difficulty that we faced as an agency with regards to the integrity of the procurement processes, not following agreed upon procedures, and other issues. And the new board for the entirety of it, it's nearly 2 years now of its operation, has ensured that any procurement that's concluded has to go through, if it's below a certain amount, it has to go through an internal audit to say that agreed upon procedures have been followed, that the regulations have been followed, that the process is properly. For larger procurement such as the IFMS, we have also looked at external auditors. One of the reasons why in the report the two tenders is still under adjudication is because we're waiting for the report of the external auditors to make sure that even before a decision is taken by the IFM's steering committee that we're convinced that all the processes have been followed. The initial idea from the board was that we should ask the Auditor General's office to do that external office audit, especially for the larger one. But they came back to us and said that they don't necessarily have the capacity to do that. So that's why on an case-by-case basis, we seek a pay for external auditors to look at the entire process before the tenders are approved. I think that some of the other issues with regards to the industry partnerships, as well as the question about the single public service, I'm sure that some of the CETA colleagues would want to add towards that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. There was a question around from Honourable Member Murray, I think, on the Phase 2 Advisory Panel independent work points and what expertise, you know, they have. Let me just preface my answer by indicating that one of the major responsibilities of CETA as an organization is to ensure that we are the prime systems integrator for government as a whole. Now, we don't become a prime systems integrator for government at all by saying that we are a prime systems integrator. We need to demonstrate our capabilities. And the strategy that we've assumed as an organization to demonstrate our capabilities is to enhance our practices and processes in terms of best practice within the world. And in this respect, we are following what is called the capability maturity model integrated model in order to demonstrate our capability as a prime systems integrator. That is an instrument that is actually being used, you know, internationally. It's an international best practice. And in order to demonstrate that capability as per that particular instrument, you need to indicate that the business processes that you are achieving or that you are implementing within the organization is consistent with that particular model, and also the maturity levels are consistent with that particular model. And what we have done in terms of our strategy is to undertake a process of assessment in this particular year, starting now in March, for capability level one in the areas of acquisition, our acquisition capabilities and practices, in the areas of our development practices and processes, and in the areas of service delivery capability, the areas of service delivery capability. All those three areas are going to be assessed, and it's going to be assessed by an independent panel. The panel will be appointed by the two ministers, as has been indicated earlier on, and the panels are people who are basically being drawn from those from the field of expertise. At present, in terms of the self-assessment that we have done, which was mentioned earlier on in the presentation, the self-assessment was actually done by people from the Software Engineering Institute from Johannesburg, who are actually experts, you know, in this area. So, in short, what we are saying is that the people who will actually be appointed will be independent lead assessors, practitioners who are actually expertise in this particular field, and they will be appointed by the two ministers. When the assessment happens, CETA will be undertaking it in March. When that actually happens and we actually come through with flying colors on that particular assessment, the next challenge would be to progress to capability level two. There's about five capability levels, and it is intended that by the financial year 2015-2016, we would have reached capability level five, so that we can actually be classified and be certified as a prime systems integrator. The other technical questions will be addressed by the other colleagues from CETA. Kombucha, can you take over on the partnership issues on Neglen?
Thank you. My name is Adlan Dukaneda, and thank you, Chair. I'm going to deal with a couple of the questions that were raised, and let me start with the first one. There was a question asked that, stating 7 years has passed, and we want to look at how long this process will take to complete, and what will the cost recovery process be.
Now, effectively, what we're doing is, according to the projected plans, we're looking at completing all the development by the next year. Our intention then is implementation then will be taken up as per how the departments structure themselves. And this will be projected by the departments. Uptake is, the challenge about uptake is not based on CETA's capacity, because it's based also with our partners that we have. So as we get the partners involved, the partners and the industry players can actually come on board, and we could roll out numerous simultaneous implementations across government departments. So that could take that is dependent on a couple of years we're looking at it. In terms of the cost recovery process that we are looking at, what the intention is for IFMS is that you remember that IFMS is replacing a number of legacy systems. Now, as we are retiring these legacy systems, specifically there is key ones coming from Treasury, that is the biggest threat in terms of national and provincial departments. We will then look at retiring the legacy and taking the uptake of IFMS. So there's a model of looking at how we can manage that by ensuring that as we take up the one solution, the other solution is being taken down, and therefore this says that there's an impact on the cost recovery. One of the prime reasons for the cabinet memo of 2005 actually indicated that when IFMS comes into play and as it implements, the current budget in cost of the total treasury-based systems should be, in fact, kept in line. So that's about, at this point, 1.3 billion per annum. Now, what I might also indicate is this doesn't look at all the other systems that are more wider and more broader. There is a wide level of duplication. CETA has done a government inventory of systems, and we look at the duplication of systems that are in the financial management space. The supply chain in HRM space is quite a big diversity. So you will remember that DoD runs their own systems in the space. That budget is not included there. SEPS has their own systems and a lot of other departments. So, of course, there's those things that must be considered as well. Okay, in terms of, there was a question also raised in terms of the number of jobs that IFMS has created, both direct and indirect. Up to this point, at the direct level, it's inclusive of all the processes that we've followed, development as well as the partners. To create IFMS has been about 320 jobs that it's created directly. Of course, as we now accelerate some of the development efforts, we also see a lot more being taken up. Most probably will peak around 500. In terms of indirect, there's a number of things that we have to consider in terms of that. There are our partners that are directly involved with implementation. And as we go through the implementation, you need on average about 12 or 14 people per implementation that takes itself up, which can last 6 to 12 months. So we talk about 140 departments. We could have indirectly over 1,000 people involved with IFMS as we continue, okay, or even more. Okay, then there was a question. I think we dealt with the question around the independent panel, and then there was a question around what is the basis of, I must say, in terms of the vacancy rate, IFMS has been dealing with this year. It was indicated this has been reduced quite significantly now to about 30% from 60% vacancy. And we are dealing with partnerships with the industry to cover the gap, and we should have a way of resolving that very shortly. In terms of the role and the value of money, in terms of our productivity, now, there was a major issue around there is when IFMS was implemented, it's not just about replacing one solution. It was also meant to ensure that you can implement the PFMA more comprehensively, as well as the PSA. Now, those two acts has a major impact on how we actually deliver, and it's more embedded in the system. And as you know, if the system has those rules more clearly defined, it will assist us a lot more. So two things that we looked at in terms of most of this year, there's a big security conscious perspective in IFMS, which is going to help us in terms of how we deal with segregation of duty and the delegation of authority issues. And it will also manage things like how it's a non-repudiation issue, which means we can make sure that if you're doing the wrong thing, it's definitely you, not someone who stole your password by mistake. Okay? So those things make sure that we can start looking at managing
the sheer corruption issues and the challenges we have there, because that itself is an unquantified issue. And then we'll reduce, obviously, the duplication of systems. And then one other thing is that either workflow process that we work on, current systems that we have basically are screen-based. The workflow system does allow us to monitor and see what the issues are around productivity and the time factors in terms of dealing with certain things which can be embedded into the system itself to manage how a department's effectiveness can be improved. Okay. And then the last thing, implementation in industry partners. What we indicated, and it was important to note, how do you know who these partners are and how will they deal with things? What we've done, we've defined what we call the implementation methodology. It's an approach. We get our partners on board. We actually give them a defined method and process to follow in terms of how they will do different disciplines. There's 8 disciplines, from data management to change management to training and a whole lot of them. They get accredited in those, or certified in those areas, so we know they can produce the same type of quality and work and effort that we have. So when they go into a department, it's not just a general thing of implementing SOPs. You have to implement by the approach, and that's how the implementation happens, and then there's a quality check that CETA always ensures to make sure that if a specific partner is not delivering the quality, at least we can have oversight of that. So we don't allow bad work to continue all the time in terms of the process going forward.
Just to complete from CETA's part on the issue around industry partners, how we identified them. We went out for the development partners, we went out on a tender process, and the criteria that drove us was to say we wanted partners who have the capacity to develop, but also who are willing to share the risk and revenue with government, so that they don't become just service providers, because they add more value in that space. Similarly, with the implementation partners, except the implementation methodology, we went out also on the tender invited partners with the responsibility of also growing the SMMEs. In terms of the implementation partners, we've got categories. They range from incubator level to a platinum partner. The incubator level is people who are starting up who, after the training, they still require further guidance from what you call platinum or CETA. So we incubate them as part of our commitment and responsibility to grow the local ICT industry. Part of the requirements that was put for the what you call gold and platinum partners is that they have a responsibility to incubate those who are on the incubator level and the bronze level as part of reinvestment and a commitment to grow the industry, but also as part of embedding a methodology of implementation of government so that you can have quality and adoption across South Africa. If you go to other countries, you find that they have implemented or adopted particular implementation methodologies which are their own. Like ours, we developed our own implementation methodology. But the main key drivers of our partnership is that we want revenue and risk share, so that the partners take some of the responsibilities, not only them getting money from government, but also a contribution to growing the local ICT industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether from the National Treasury, Bobby, you want to add.
Thank you, Chair and members. I think similarly, I'm also starting to feel like National Treasury should not have been here, because I think all the colleagues are now responding to all the questions adequately. But just maybe to supplement on two areas. One about the single public service. I think what we should just also note that these applications, when they were, or the recommendations that were put to cabinet at the time, the whole concept of the single public service was not yet on the table in terms of recommendation. So at the time when this IFMS was actually conceived, the idea has always been that cost and value for money. I think also again the colleagues have adequately responded to most of the things. However, what we just need to also take cognizance of is that the life of systems of this nature is generally estimated around 20 years or so. And we've always projected that this IFMS will have a lifespan of between 15 to 20 years. And again, taking from what Neglin has also said, that this system also needs to be taken into cognizance in the light of a replacement project. Currently, we have a DOD, SAPS, and national treasury systems, which are predominantly the ones that are operating in the space of financial management that will go to the limited space. Secondly, what the DG said is that over and above what the current capabilities are, we are actually adding more functionality into the IFMS. So what the current systems are capable of doing, we're actually expanding a little bit of that. So one needs to take that into cognizance. But thirdly, remember there were also systems in provinces like Limpopo and the Northwest that also provided for financial management systems. And in a bid to try and reconsolidate, we've actually, for example, the lead size of asset management, the idea of rolling out asset management into Limpopo was also driven by the idea of saying, let's begin to actually phase out of those financial systems that were sitting there, and then the point in case here being Finesse. And we've successfully been able to actually phase out Finesse in Limpopo, and we're in the process of trying to do the same in the Northwest with the Woka system, although it's still only beginning to emerge. And the cost savings that then gets realized out of those phasing out actually also add into the bigger pool a certain cost benefit over the life of the IFMS and therefore benefit the whole project. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, there is just two last questions. One on the question you asked on the how you determine that the personal information is reserved, as you reserve it. And then the other one on the model of productivity, measure of productivity. Your permission, I'll ask you to just to quickly deal with the one on as well, and then I'll just make a comment on the productivity one.
Thank you, Chen. We use our data quality assessment framework to determine what sector contributes to the data quality in person. But we also do that in line with the Statistics South Africa quality assessment of data. So we have two pieces of monitoring tools that we use to assess whether a department has got credible information. One is an early warning system that we use that looks at performance areas around management planning, administration, workflow, expenditure, and accountability. And around all those performance areas, we've got the indicators such as your turnover rate, your replacement rate, your vacancy rate, that we look in line whether a department is performing adequately or not. And on the basis of that, we do send a quarterly report to department to make sure that they do understand that in terms of a particular indicator, the department is not performing well. We also produce on a quarterly basis, and we send this report to all management within government departments. We call it a strategic HR report, which also outlines how a department is doing in terms of vacancy rates and unfunded ratios and all of these things. So on the basis of that, we had to prioritize which departments, government departments, we have to success. And what we did was to look at especially provincial departments, because normally the experience has been that we do send this report, but implementation doesn't happen on the basis of the interventions that we recommend. So we go to this department and we work on a one-to-one basis in terms of the accuracy of the crucial fields that we have identified to be clear. Thank you, Chair.
The productivity one, I think the project that is only taking off now between us in DPSA and the National Productivity Institute, and then with education and health as departments in which we'll be piloting the productivity assessment model. So a credible, recognized productivity assessment model, there isn't one that is being used at the moment.
productive use in other areas. But the model itself at this stage is not in place, and we'll be able to pilot it in health and education together with the National Productive Institute once we finalize it.
Thank you very much. These are the responses. Are there any follow-ups, members? Well, probably just one last question from my side. It's on the role of all the Public Service Commission and the Minister for Monitoring and Evaluation, the President. He was looking at your the IFMS governance structure as approved by Cabinet 2005. I would imagine that these two institutions, monitoring and evaluation, the ministry, and PSC, have got to be part, because they play a very critical role in overseeing the actual implementation of the system, that they are responsible for the monitoring and evaluation of the public service. We know that currently monitoring and evaluation systems are being developed. Now, surely at some point they've got to be aligned with the IFMS automated system. Now, what is your response to that? From where I'm sitting, I think they've got to end. Of course, by 2005, when this governance structure was approved, there was no ministry of monitoring and evaluation. But now that there is, how then are they going to be involved in this whole process?
Honourable Chairperson, questions about the Public Service Commission seem to follow me wherever I go. I suspect it may not be appropriate for the Public Service Commission to be in the government arrangement because their oversight role is even above the oversight structures that are provided for. Because once they become part of this, then the issue of question about their independence, more like the Auditor General as well. The Auditor General comes from outside and say, is this project working, including its governance structure? So if they become part of the governance structure, then it becomes difficult for them, in a sense, because they become a player, if you like, in the process. But I would imagine that the Public Service Commission may, as part of their oversight work at some point, say, we want to assess the IFMS, both in terms of its governance arrangement, their effectiveness, and so on and so on, and independently come to Parliament and say, in addition to the reports you get from the implementers, these are our findings, the same way the Auditor General could do that. You're correct in terms of the performance and monitoring and evaluation, that when the Cabinet in 2005 approved the arrangement, that the institution wasn't there. At the moment, the relationship we have with them is as the user of the information. So they use the information that is generated from the monitoring and evaluation systems for purposes of consolidating and presenting it to, if you look at the midterm review that they are finalizing now, it draws from these various sources of information, just in terms of the report they provide to FOSAT, for example. One of the recent discussions we had at FOSAT is when they were tabling information from TASAL. Say, this is what TASAL is saying to us about your department, and then asking the DG is there to account for the information that is taken from TASAL. So at this stage, it's really at the level of them as the user of information, not so much as being in the government structures of this. But it's a point that we will take up with the Minister for Public Service and Administration, so that in discussion with his counterpart, the Minister of Finance,
thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, just one last question. I don't know if response can be provided on the Public Service Commission. Whether, you know, I believe there's some changes coming in the Public Service Commission in terms of posts and things like that. Is this an awkward place to ask those questions?
Yeah, well, the Public Service Commission is not taken. So we don't want to abuse the fish. As correctly alluded, that it would seem that the Public Service Commission follows them everywhere. But I'm certain that when we invite the PSC, they'll be better placed to answer those questions. We will, I think, in our next agenda item deal with the problem, so we'll check when we'll be meeting with the Public Service Commission. But thank you very much. Thank you very much, members. Thank you very much, colleagues from the Department, Public Service Administration, National Treasury, CETA. I think this was